This process of creative construction operates also on the temporal level. In perceiving an event, even for the duration of a finger snap, which in fact is composed of myriad minute temporal sequences, we conflate all these moments into one continuum. A good analogy for this, cited by Dharmakirti and taught to students in the Tibetan monastic colleges, is that when at night you turn a flaming torch around in a circle, an observer sees a wheel of fire. If you closely observe the wheel, you see that it is made up of a series of illuminated moments. Thinking back to my childhood when I was absorbed in the mechanics of film projectors, I realized that the moving image of a film on a screen is in fact made up of a series of stills. Yet we perceive the movie as fluid motion. The questions of how perceptions arise, and in particular, what the relationship is between a perceptual event and its objects, have been major areas of interest for Indian and Tibetan philosophers. There has been a long-standing debate within Buddhist epistemological thinking on how the perception of a given object arises. Three principal standpoints have emerged. One school of thought upholds the view that just as there are a multiplicity of colors in a multicolored object, there are a multiplicity of perceptions in the visual experience of looking at it. A second position maintains that perception is best compared to the splitting of a hard-boiled egg. When an egg is sliced in half, there are two identical pieces. Likewise, when the senses come into contact with their respective objects, a single perceptual event splits into an objective half and a subjective half. The third position, traditionally the preferred standpoint of Tibetan thinkers, argues that regardless of the multiplicity of facets in a chosen object of perception, the actual perceptual experience is a single unitary event. One important area of discussion in Buddhist epistemology is the analysis of true and false perceptions. For Buddhism, it is knowledge or correct insight that brings about freedom from deluded states of mind, so close attention is paid to understanding what constitutes knowledge. The distinction between true understanding and false understanding becomes, therefore, a major concern. There is a vast analysis of all kinds of perceptual experiences and the variety of causes for perceptual errors. If one stands on a boat sailing down the river and perceives the trees on the bank to be moving, the optical illusion lies in the external condition that the boat is moving. If one suffers from jaundice, one may see even a white object like a conch shell as yellow. Here, the condition for the illusion is internal. If one sees a coiled rope at dusk in an area known for poisonous snakes, one may perceive it as a snake. In this case, the condition of illusion is both internal, that is, one's fear of snakes, and external, that is, in the configuration of the rope and the low visibility. These are all cases where the illusion is conditioned by very immediate circumstances. But there is a whole category of more complex conditions for false cognitions, such as the belief in an autonomous self, or the belief that the self or other conditioned phenomena are permanent. During an experience, there's no way to distinguish between accurate and deluded perception. It's only in hindsight that we can make this distinction. It is, in effect, the subsequent experiences derived from such cognitions that help determine whether they are valid or invalid. It would be interesting to know whether neuroscience will be able to differentiate between accurate and inaccurate perceptions at the level of brain activity. On several occasions, I've asked this question of neuroscientists. So far, to my knowledge, no such experiment has been conducted. On the phenomenological level, we can discern the process by which our mind can go through transitions between several different and, in some cases, diametrically opposed states. For example, let us ask whether it was on the moon or on Mars that Neil Armstrong set foot in 1969. A person could begin by believing strongly that it was Mars. Then, as a result of hearing about the latest Mars probe, he or she might start to waver in this conviction. Once it becomes clear that no manned mission to Mars has yet taken place, he or she might lean toward the correct conclusion that Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. Finally, as a result of speaking to other people and reading accounts of the Apollo mission, the individual may arrive at the correct answer to the original question. In a case like this, we can see that the mind goes from a state of total error through a state of wavering to correct belief and finally to true knowledge.